The next phase, however, of an individual life is one of disengagement. In the middle of life, you find the society beginning to disengage you. Younger people are coming along to take the roles that were yours. Furthermore, you are yourself becoming disengaged. I mean, after you've heard and seen the same thing 10,000 times, you begin to know about it and would like something else. There is a spontaneous disengagement that takes place. You are through with it. What happens then is the energies that were outward directed turn inward. And since the symbols of the culture that engaged you are clues to the psychological depths within, you turn inward to find friends in these footsteps of the marga that lead you to your own depth. And so the mythologically grounded society serves, through its myths, two functions. One, to engage the individual very deeply in the social order, and at the same time to instruct him in the potentialities of his own human spirit. Now I want to say a couple of words about the historical side of this subject. What are the great historical divisions? First, of course, we have the very primitive societies, the hunting and gathering societies, where the whole aim of the mythology really is to engage the individual in the social order and then to disengage him. He is turned into a Pawnee or a Hottentot or a member of that tribe, and the society goes to work to scarify the body, tell him how to do his hair and all that kind of thing, so that his personality is almost completely dismissed. He's turned into an organ of an organism, the organism being the society. And even in later traditions, there's a good deal of that, what might be called tribalism. When we come to a later stage then, the stage of the early agricultural people, the myths are devoted largely to the problems and moments of the agricultural year. There's a great accent on the cycle of time. And finally, when in the fourth millennium BC, about 3200 BC, the great city-states emerged in Mesopotamia, and literacy became possible. Just about 3200 BC, writing was invented, mathematics were invented, careful observation of the heavens were engaged in. It was discovered at that time that the planets moved at a mathematically determinable rate through the constellations of the heavens. And then a whole new idea became born. Not the animals of the hunt, not the fields of the planting, but the passages of the planets became the main concern of mythology. The powers of the heavens, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And the concept, and this is the basic one, underlying all of the early high civilizations, the concept of an impersonal power that manifests itself through the passages of the heavens became the dominant concept of the religions. The notion of a world coming into being and going out of being. As the year comes and goes, we're moving into winter now, spring will come, summer, another fall, that cycle. Worlds came and went away. This became the dominant idea. And the deities, plural, the gods, were simply agents of different aspects of that impersonal power. Then comes this fundamental idea, which is dominant still in the Orient, the idea of a power transcendent of all knowing, which manifests itself, which lives in the order of the heavens, in the trees, in the animals, in ourselves. I would say that the dominant Oriental idea, and it's coming to us with the gurus and rishis and rinpoches that are coming over here now, is that the ultimate mystery of being is absolutely beyond our knowing. It transcends all the categories of thought. We think in terms of pairs of opposites, true, false, one, many, being, non-being. The ultimate truth transcends all that. And so it is transcendent of our knowledge, and at the same time, it is the very being of ourselves. This is something that we've lost in our Western thinking. It was originally there, and we've come across it every now and then. The idea of the ultimate being transcendent and immanent at the same time. So that the goal of all of the religions, the goal even of the social order, is to bring about an experience of one's identity with that being which is the being of beings and is no being, is both being and non-being and beyond all that. This comes out in the Chandogya Upanishad in India in the 9th century BC already, in that saying, Tattvamasi, thou art that. You are yourself that mystery which it is your aim to know. And yet it is not the you, the lovely you, that you're so greatly interested in preserving and in introducing to others and so forth. Not the you that is separate from others. As long as there is a I and you, that's not the you we're talking about.